Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. Hello. You know, it's weird. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving, yet it feels like we just had Thanksgiving like a month ago.
Right?
Is that
so not weird? So weird. Yeah. So weird.
Time flies when you're not American. So yeah, it's a pre Thanksgiving Eve, if that's a thing. It feels like it should be a thing. Movies, if they've taught me anything, there's an Eve to every holiday.
Totally have an everything Eve. I have a birthday Eve for sure. Yeah.
So what does that entail? Just like I get to do what I want.
Well, I get a text from my best friend every single year, and she just says, "Happy birthday, Eve!" And then happy birthday on my actual birthday. But yeah, been a thing since I was like a kid. I don't know. We always used to go do fun stuff because it was my birthday Eve. Same as Christmas Eve. Yeah. Same amount of hype.
Christmas Eve is the Eve to end
that's
all
an
Eves.
Actual Eve. Yeah.
That's a literal Eve.
A recognized Eve.
Yeah, an officially sanctioned go home at noon, Eve. Now, I know Jim, he had mentioned in the Discord today, which there was a healthy back and forth bit.ly/TGI Discord, where he was saying he was going to get off at noon to go check out some sales, which we're going to be talking about later. So maybe that is what is the definition of an Eve is that you get off of work at noon.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Makes sense.
I will say, like, I can't believe how many of the deals are, like, spilling over from Friday. Like, I got an email today basically telling me my entire Steam wishlist is on sale, and I was like, huh, I thought this was supposed to be a Friday thing, but everyone is now doing the same thing that I know it happens for us up here in Canada is Boxing Day, which is the 26th of December, and it's turned it from Boxing Day, which used to be our big sale day, to Boxing Week, and now it seems Black Friday has done the same thing. It's like it's Black Friday week now. And I don't know if that's just up in Canada or if it's the same in the U.S. Well, I guess, it must be the same in the U.S. if Steam is doing it. So
yeah,
it seems like all the deals are already available and there's like nothing special about Friday, which is kind of okay. Maybe no one will kill themselves at shopping malls.
No, exactly. And that's why it's an important thing. I know a lot of people, I don't know, Christmas is held up a lot higher than I guess Thanksgiving is, but I could be wrong. I'm kind of jealous that they have this holiday and it's just another Thursday in November for us, but don't tell anyone I said that. But what I'm thinking is that they spread it out over the week so that you don't feel like you have to go out on Friday. I think there are still door crashers, which is still something that I've seen less of, but some stores still do it. But the beauty of the sales we're going to talk about is that you don't have to even get up. You could sit in bed and just order.
I did that on a Boxing Day one year, probably like 4 or 5 years ago. I stayed in bed, ordered a TV. It was glorious.
Yeah, and that's the dream, really, is not having to get up to order a television. You could just do it in bed. And I mean, I feel like my parents, if they could have done that when they were my age, they would be just as enthusiastic about spending money on a television. But sales are great and there's a lot of them, and honestly you can't go 2 minutes without hearing about a new one. Everything is on sale, and that's what we're going to talk about later today, I think.
Right, but before we do that, I want to hear your thoughts, because obviously I always want to hear your thoughts on Horizon in general, but you've been playing the Frozen Wilds now, which I was talking about last week and I was really excited about. How do you feel about now that you've had a little bit of time in Frozen Wilds? Was it worth me pushing you
to
go and play that that DLC?
I think so, because there was another game that we were going to talk about this week that we're not going to talk about because I haven't had a chance to really play it, which was Battlefront 2. And there's just a lot of, I'll say it, shit surrounding that game. And honestly, it just would feel very good to play something that just feels great. And Frozen Wilds is exactly how you described it. It's the perfect expansion without, you know, my idea of a perfect expansion is an epilogue, but I realize that an epilogue is essentially sequel. You know, and they're going to do a sequel, that's fine. But in terms of a side campaign, this is probably the best side campaign that I've ever seen implemented into a game. It just feels like they laid the right amount of framework in the main game to support the idea of a little bit more of the world being unveiled. And that's in the main game, for those who don't know, the Bannur, the Bannock, whatever people show up and they're like, "Hey, we have friendly animals, but these guys suddenly stop being friendly to help us figure it out." It introduces you to these characters, this tribe, very briefly, And it feels like this idea that just wasn't quite realized, but was still cool and felt fleshed out. And then in this, they kind of, they don't even give you Bannur, which is the main northern city. They give you just a small introduction to that continent. So they easily could expand into Bannur in the sequel.
Proper, yeah.
And I honestly could see Horizon Dawn, or whatever they end up calling it, being more of a title like Dragon Age Inquisition, where you're traveling in between pockets of land as opposed to just one big world. So many open worlds instead of one open world. But I could be wrong. She could just like go north and then all of a sudden we're exploring like what's north of Colorado. but in terms of the expansion, man, the one thing I wish they would have done is, as soon as you get in there, just address the fact that Aloy just looks so cold. You know?
All the time. I found even when I was wearing Bannuk armor, she still kind of like shivers and talks about like how her breath is freezing before it even gets out of her lungs. Like, and she does. She talks about being cold.
All the time.
All the time. Yeah.
I haven't heard although a duplicate,
though. I don't think I've unlocked any of the new armor yet, because the new armor is surprisingly expensive.
Yeah, that blue gleam does not come around very often, and
you get it by questing, but I feel like the cheapest armor is like 12-ish blue gleam, and I feel like the most I've been awarded from a quest was like 3. So it's like you have to do like 4 major main story quests before you kind of get through it. And I also really like what they did, and I don't want to spoil it too much for you if you haven't been there yet, but there is basically like armor that doubles your health. It's like the end game armor in the main game. And if you've unlocked it, it's like full of like tech from the past sort of thing. So basically what it does is it puts a shield on you that is equal to your max health.
Oh.
And you deplete your shield, and then, but then the shield can like recharge if you just stop taking damage for a second. So it's basically like almost like infinity health as long as you don't take like one shot that deals like 700 damage at once.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of, I had that for the end boss. It made the end boss really, really easy for me when I was playing the main game. And I was a little bit worried because I was like, okay, I've unlocked this super overpowered armor set. How is that going to impact my experience of Frozen Wilds? I was expecting to just kind of like waltz through it. But the towers in Frozen Wild that you have to disable actually disable your tech. So it disables your armor.
Oh,
if
really?
You have the ancient armor set. Yeah.
Huh. I
really
that.
Like that. Yeah, so I wasn't sure if you'd actually seen it or not, because then it basically drives you to go and get the blue gleam armor that you can get, like the very specific to this expansion armor sets, which I like, because I was worried I was going to like miss out on all of that.
Yeah, so I did not get the end game armor in the main game, just because I think you had to find, it's one
you
of those things.
You had to find a lot of things.
Yeah, they didn't throw it out at you. They kind of just said like, if you find this stuff, you can come back and you can collect this armor, and it looks like Killzone armor basically, but it's like a personal armor that was worn by somebody. I can't remember if it was actually a spoiler or not, but in this game, so I had enough blue gleam to get like the best bow, and what they've done, so the best part about this expansion, I don't want to spend too much time on the game because we've discussed doing like a separate episode about it, because I think there's enough there that warrants another spoiler conversation, because I think this expansion adds onto and builds upon the world that they've created in Horizon, and that the story, which when you originally described it to me as like, no, there's another AI and there's another rogue AI, and it's like, what, they just copy paste the story from the first, like I literally was thinking that, I was like, that sounds kind of redundant, like kind of redundant.
A little derivative, yeah.
Yeah, and then you get in there, and I have not gotten super far, but it makes sense in the world that they're in, where they came from, and that the old world, there wasn't just one company striving to, and I don't know what, they mention Pharaoh, which is the main company that created all the robots that go mad, and I think they mention another company, or they're like a side company of Pharaoh. I don't know. I haven't really gotten super far yet, but there's talk of robots and there's talk of this Dick guy who's just kind of a dick and nobody likes him. And I gathered that pretty quickly. And there's something to do with robots or something. Anyways, I'm still kind of piecing it together. I don't know if you've gotten a little farther, but the story kind of presents what was happening in that region, similar to what was happening elsewhere. Like in the main game, that region was mainly just here's where a couple of facilities were for this Zero Dawn project. In the cut, as they call it, which is a small region leading into Bannur that isn't included, but the cut's there, it seems like there's a different facility, different types of facilities there, and there's only like a couple of them, some military, some just robotic companies, and there's a lot of cool like tidbits in there. You're collecting statues and stuff, and those statues are like talking about the history of Yellowstone National Park and how it was shut down and then brought back. And I thought that was really cool, kind of like, I like the real world building upon where they take 2017 and then build out the future of that location using
because the story. The whole like old world, basically kind of the story starts around, you know, our kind of present day. I think the earliest stuff is kind of around the millennium, so like the year 2000. And then it goes about 50 years in the future, and then that's when the, you know, crisis hits. So you've got about 50 years of like, almost half of it is stuff we've already experienced. The other half is kind of like extrapolating into the next 25 years and everything that leads to this kind of apocalyptic crisis with the robots. And finding out things that happen in that time period was probably one of my favorite things about this game. The world that they built and the kind of leaps in logic that they made, that like, if this happens, then these are the possible outcomes. Well, which one are we going to use to build our world? Like they made very logical steps forward, I felt like, in their world building. So a lot of this stuff feels very, very realistic and very grounded in what's currently going on and, you know, our current events and everything else. So it's a really, really interesting game, really interesting world. And you're right, Frozen Wilds expands on that in a really cool way, in that it's Yellowstone National Park. So you're like finding all of these things that are real touchstones that ground the story, even though it's, you know, thousands of years in the future sort of thing.
Yeah. And one final piece that I thought was really clever is that it's a small-ish section that they add. And there's this drive with companies to be like, well, how do we include all the little main side pieces that are in the main game?
How do you include your side piece?
I don't know what I said there, but it sounds like you were having a laugh. But I how do you include these side activities in the main game that exist, are peppered throughout the map in this small area to kind of like... I'm trying to move on. I don't know what... it's fine. Just ignore that. So anyways, long story short, the tall neck stuff. So like jumping on the giant giraffes and hitting them in the head and then scanning the area. That quest to reactivate this defunct tall neck, I thought, was a creative way of allowing me to do what I thought was really cool in the main game, is like climbing these things and seeing everything around you, giving it more. Some would see it as padding, but I thought it was a neat sort of just addition to, oh great, I gotta climb the tall neck, I've done this like 10 times. It's like, oh no, well, wait,
it kind of made that whole tall neck thing feel different, right? I mean, it kind of made sense in the area of the world that you were in, that, you know, everything up there is very much like broken down and falling apart. Like there's obviously a lot of the old stuff is broken down and falling apart in the world, but specifically up in this area, because it's like frozen waste, right? So just the idea of, you know, that not even most of the robots can't even survive up in this area. And it kind of hammers home the harsh environment that this tribe lives in. So I liked that the tall neck wasn't just still, you know, after hundreds of years walking around up there, you know, like it was broken down and you had to fix it. And you had to fix it by, you know, going and killing the specific machines that go and, you know, rip other machines apart for parts. Like that made perfect sense to me. And it's that kind of quest design that I think Horizon really excels at.
Yeah, it was a nice touch. They, at the end, spoiler alert, have you climb the tall neck and scan it. And, you know, at the end, you're doing the same thing. But the setup for it was a nice touch to kind of like you said, place it in the world, have it make sense, have you not scratching your head. It's like, well, why is this giant monster still, like, running around, and then all these, and a lot of the other thing too, Frozen Wilds is really, it can be difficult at times, and pretty much every monster that you come across above, you know, sort of the base tier are these souped up versions, and then the new monsters that they introduce, which I've come across, just the one so far, and maybe there is only one, but which is kind of like a bear, makes sense for the world. And this is early on that you come across.
Oh, you got to the bear? Oh, that's so cool. I like the bear quite a lot. I thought it fit the world really well and made a lot of sense. And it was hard.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And it was optional too. It's like, you don't have to kill this thing.
Yeah, it's optional. Yeah, if you can sneak by, they let you sneak by, which I thought was also really cool. But of course, I had to fight it.
I fought it. And yeah, the towers that pulsate, they're very tough because what they do is they, again, we could talk about this for an entire episode, and we're going to, but we're going to try to. But those towers, they pulsate like a repairing. So not only do they take out your armor, but they're repairing the monsters that you're trying to kill. So you have to go in there stealthily. And then there's like this stressful, oh my God, watching the bar fill as you're trying to disable the tower. While these huge monsters, it's none of the small ones. Maybe the first tower is like one small animal. But after that, all the towers are surrounded by at least three of the bigger tier monsters, robots. And they seem a little stupid in their pathing, which is nice. It's been forgiving so far, but... I've been able to get in there, and it's still stressful every time, even though I think the game is kind of allowing me to get in close without being caught. Mm-hmm. But I'm having a blast with it. I haven't been able to stop, and I 100% agree with you. And then I don't want this game to end, and I'm digging this part of the game much more than any of the other continents in terms of the look and feel. I don't know, maybe it's a cliche for a Canadian to like, you know, the frozen north, but I do appreciate this section much more.
I feel like it's more vibrant and colorful than I thought it was going to be. They did a really good job of kind of incorporating hot springs and dyes and paint and stuff in a way that they could have just made it a very, like, black and white and blue kind of world, and they didn't. They made it very vibrant and interesting and colorful while still maintaining the fact that it's a frozen waste. I thought they did an awesome job. So I like the visual direction of this expansion too. So shocker to no one, the Gamers Inn again recommends Horizon Zero Dawn and the expansion Frozen Wild. So you guys should definitely go check it out. But Ryan, I also want to talk to you before we get into my adventures in Mario. I wanted to talk to you about Destiny too, because again, this is a game I am not interested in whatsoever, but people seem to still be playing it, which I'm shocked, because I felt like Destiny... Well, no, like I felt like Destiny fell off pretty quick. Like, not a lot of people were playing it past endgame content, but it seems to be that a lot of people are sticking with Destiny 2 and still doing the raid stuff, still doing the PvP stuff. So I'm interested to know, like, now that you, as someone who doesn't raid in the MMO that most of our friends play, World of Warcraft, How are you liking Destiny 2 raiding? Like, I'm surprised you've gotten this far into endgame content.
And that's why I wanted to talk about it on the show, because I wanted to talk to someone who I would consider a hardcore raider. Like, if you have a raid schedule, you're a hardcore raider, and that's not a slight at all. I think that's awesome. And when it comes to Destiny 2, I always said, like, I will enjoy Destiny up to the raid, because I just don't raid. It takes too much time, too much energy. But our mutual friend Belanger has been just killing it with Destiny, just nonstop, focused, blinders on. The kid is asleep. Let's play Destiny, Destiny, Destiny. And he's like, well, let's do the raid on Saturday. So we got a bunch of people together. So myself, Adam, Belanger, Void Kronos, who's very active in the Discord, and then Mike from College Gamers Podcast and his buddy came and joined us. So for a 6-man raid. And I was kind of going in. I was a little nervous. I was also very excited because it was content that I
didn't. What was your role? Were you just DPSing, or did you have something a little bit more like critical, like healing or tanking? And does Destiny even kind of subscribe to those traditional MMO roles?
So yes and no. So the game. So here's the thing. Destiny 2 on paper, to people who play WoW raiding and have roles with healing and DPS and tanking, would look at Destiny and think like, oh, three classes, there's no, and I thought this as well, there's no way you're going to have like specific roles. But with six characters, they've designed the raid in a way with the encounters so that you could do it with, I'm sure you could do it with six hunters, but we had a good spread. So we were probably, I think, two hunters, three titans, which are the paladin types, the hunters are the hunters. And then the warlocks are kind of like the sorcerers, the, you know, the magic types. And I think we had a couple of warlocks. And they all have specific powers that can assist with the encounters, mainly the final boss. All the other encounters were fun. The mechanics were more run and gun combined with do this thing in a specific order so that you don't die. So we'll start with the pre-boss mechanics. The raid is on Leviathan. You're going in to try and face off against this big fat gold cabal guy who has a cup. We'll get back to that. And he's holding these trials to kind of say, like, hey, I want you to prove your worth. I've invited you here. The Cabal are the enemy in Destiny 2, and the Cabal have invited you to this raid. And I don't know why we're going. That seems like a trap to me. but anyways, I'm no expert. So we go in there, and it's the raid, from my understanding, is each week there's a different order to the raid, and then you have to do the wings. So it's like they described them as Gauntlet, Dogs, and there's one more, might have been like, I don't know, Bathroom or something. It's probably not called Bathroom, but it seemed like a bathroom. It's where a lot of people have baths. So anyways,
I was like, are there just like, are you in like the facility from like GoldenEye where it's just like a whole bunch of like toilets on the, what do you mean a bathroom?
Oh, bathhouse. Sorry, but I called it bathroom.
Meant, like, actual like bath, like water in it, climb in and be cozy. All
right. It's not very cozy because the bathhouse is poisoned. So, and I see the chat is catching up. Yes, bathhouse. Yeah. So anyways, we had Gauntlet first, and the Gauntlet is literally a trial where there's six of us. We're all in voice chat, and voice chat, and I understand now why there isn't matchmaking built into the game for the raid, because it would be impossible if you weren't coordinating on voice chat. So boiling it down just to the, and Gauntlet to me was the most interesting one that required the most communication, because you have two runners, and those runners go in behind a wall, and it's a circular room. So you have two runners, and you have four people, one at each post. And then at a certain point, after you kill down the adds, the runners go in behind the wall and have to run around. And as they're running around, so Void and Mike were runners. So they're running around, and then on voice chat, they're calling out, okay, dog, bottom. And then the person who's been coordinated, so Belanger was coordinating all this thing, and he was like saying, okay, you're going to do this, and you're going to do that. So for me personally, I was...
I want to say I saw somebody streaming this, and I was like, what the hell are they talking about?
Exactly.
Because they, same thing. They had somebody else yelling out, like, axe, and then something. And I was like, what the hell are they even doing or talking about? And this was back when it wasn't even out on PC yet. I think it was Kick Tripod John was streaming. And I was just, and that, it was so confusing to someone who isn't familiar with the fight or with Destiny or whatever. I'm like, what the hell are they calling out axes for all the time? And they kept wiping, so that wasn't helpful because I didn't see like how everything is working. And he wasn't one of the runners. So I was just, yeah, it was very, very confusing. But now that you explain it, that makes more sense.
It is super confusing.
You would, like, have to have voice chat.
You have to have voice chat because the people who are running are calling out, you know, dog bottom. And that means that, I assume, again, I realize, let's move past it. So dog bottom, that means that two people who are on the podiums need to shoot the other two. So basically, your viewpoint when you're on the podium is you see these three red circles, and you have to shoot the other circles that they don't mention, and those two remaining circles have to be shot at the same time. So and I'm not going to explain every one of them, just this one, because it's the most interesting. So the two people on the podiums have to shoot simultaneously the two other circles that weren't called out, so that shooting all those turns them green, and then the runner can pass through the gate and move forward. And the reason they're running is they're carrying these orbs that they then need to bring into the center of the room. And I think both people need to make a complete turn in order to escape the runner and then go in and drop their orb in the basket to progress. And if you're worried you're not going to get to be a runner, don't worry, because at the end of it all, everybody runs. And it is as chaotic as you would imagine. And the weird thing about Destiny 2, as opposed to the minimal rating I've done in WoW, is that it celebrates... I shouldn't say celebrates. It No, encourage is the wrong word as well. I'm just it just makes you wipe all the time. You wiping and dying and having the whole team go down is by design. And to me, when it was explained to me like that, it didn't seem like that sounded like a lot of fun.
No, that doesn't sound like fun to me at all. Like, I know we just killed, well, not just, a while ago we killed Heroic Kill Jaden, and I think we wiped on him like 51 times or something before we finally got our kill. It was the most frustrating thing ever. It took us like 3 weeks or something. It was stupid, and I hated it. And I can't imagine playing a game that by design you wipe in all of your raid attempts. Like, why?
You're going to wipe consistently. And I should skip to the end and say that we did finish it in one evening. Like, we finished the raid. And to me,
the whole thing?
The whole thing. Okay. And to me...
See, that confuses me. Like, if you're meant to wipe, but you were able to take a team that had never played together in and clear it in one night, that seems like it's not hard enough. Which is a really funny kind of, like, juxtaposition. Like, wipe all the time, but finish a raid in one night doesn't mesh to me in my head as a WoW raider.
And see, this is why I wanted to talk about it with you, because I feel like you're the perfect sounding board for this, because it's gonna sound Greek but should also sound and I'm trying to explain in a way that it should sound at least relatively interesting, because to me it felt like it was like a lot of fun. At the very end of it, we were having tons of fun, and the reason you're designed to wipe is because these mechanics aren't super complex and super hard to kind of understand once, because we were a team of six, but eventually we did get it. And it is difficult. It's not easy. And one mistake can wipe that encounter. And then when you... So basically, each person on your team... And we were all pretty well geared in that. And I'd say, like, everybody had run the raid except for myself and Adam. We were the only two.
Oh, okay.
So we had some pretty good guidance there. I'd say really good guidance. And a lot of people on the team. And we had to bring in a backup for the boss, because Mike had to jet. So we did have, like... some solid help. I do not want to say we went in there, you know, with blindfolds and we did it. And there is a hard mode as well that we did. I'm not going to attempt, because that's like top tier stuff. But when you wipe or you make a mistake, there's very minimal sort of recovery. You know,
WoW, punishment for wiping.
No, and there's no punishment for wiping whatsoever, except that you have to start that encounter over again. So in the gauntlet, a couple times we got all the way to all of us running, and then one of us died, and that was a wipe, and it was called, okay, that's a wipe, and then everybody dies, and you have to start the gauntlet all over again, which isn't a long encounter, and none of them are terribly long, but when you do wipe near the end of it, it is pretty... It's kind of frustrating. There were a couple times where we were doing an encounter a lot, but it felt like once you finally nailed it, it felt really good. Like I imagine it would when you're raiding in WoW. Like when you finish a boss you've been working on for whatever amount of time, when you finish it and you get the loot, it's like, oh, that's awesome. And I only did the raid once, and I thought I would only want to do it once, but I'm actually looking forward to playing more of the raid.
That's good.
Yeah, it's crazy. The loot that I got in the first raid was kind of like mind-bogglingly awesome, and my power level shot up, which is great. And the story that they present in the raid is interesting, in that at the very end it kind of justifies the reason for you going in there, and also the reason why many people are going to go in there to prove themselves. And I guess there's some story implications for the next expansion.
It's kind of nice, because that's something World of Warcraft definitely doesn't do. World of Warcraft is so much like everyone is doing the exact same thing, but they never ever reference, like, they just call you like a group of adventurers, like a group of adventurers killed the Lich King. Like, the idea of a trial makes a lot of sense and explains why, like, it puts you in a world with a whole bunch of other people and makes you all like equally important and recognized, as opposed to like, oh, yeah, you're in this world full of a whole bunch of people, and, oh, no, wait, you guys are the only ones chosen to go after Kill Jaden, you know, like, it's stuff like that. So it sounds like that lore-wise, they did a really good job of kind of integrating the idea of having many, many different heroes and, like, you actually being part of, a whole army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense at the very end, where it's like, oh, this is why, a bunch of people are going in here to prove their worthiness, and why you would go in again, not just for loot, just to kind of like continue getting. Because in Destiny, when you do a specific task, you get tokens, and then those tokens you can trade in for more loot. So when we finished the raid, not only was I getting all the loot from the bosses, but I was also getting loot from the turn-ins that had now popped up as like, hey, you did the trial, now prove your worthiness even further. But yeah, I had a really good time. And honestly, the mechanics, like with the boss and stuff, that's where it started to get into the whole like MMO type rating, where it's like, okay, in this phase, you're going to do this, and in this phase, you're going to do that, and you need to make sure you burn this guy down first. Don't touch these guys. You're going to have to call out specific stuff. Like, there was just a lot of coordination and a lot of like explaining to do. And we had so much fun. I had a lot of fun. And even though we were wiping a lot with the boss, eventually we did get it down, and it was the greatest feeling that I've had in terms of like multiplayer gaming in a long time, especially with Destiny 2. I did not fathom that I would have this much fun with this game, and we had so much fun. And but yeah, that's where the raiding mechanics come in. Like, okay, Titan needs to drop their shield in this phase, and then you know, you'll drop it here, and then you drop it there, and then you drop it there, and then that'll be a complete turn, and then you need to drop your empowering rift. And there's just so much lingo being passed around. It's like, okay, this is MMO writing.
Right.
And I mean, on the surface of it, to folks who are playing World of Warcraft and all the other MMOs, probably look at Destiny 2 and think like, that's not raiding. But if you actually go in there and do it, or you stick it through and watch a whole raid, it is raiding. And maybe it's not like the same caliber, but it's my kind of style, because you can do it in one night. I mean, we're up till 2 a.m. It was a long go. It was about 5 hours straight, but it was still doable in one sitting. And now that I think I know it, and honestly, there's talk of us going and doing it tonight. But you know, now that we've kind of done it, I feel like I have a much. I'm by no means an expert, and there are people out there who know a lot more, and I will certainly allow them to guide us. But I'm looking forward to playing more for sure. But yeah, if you want to do the raid, join the clan. There's a lot of people in there that are more than willing to run it and do all the fun stuff in Destiny 2. So
Are you playing in the Amove clan?
I am, yeah. So the group was primarily made up of Amove. We have a huge clan in there, and honestly, I find most people that I group up with that are friends that have joined other clans, it's like, you know, my clan doesn't hit the weekly engrams, so I'm just going to join Amove, because we've been getting everything except for the main PvP one. So you get a legendary engram up to 4 times a week, and for different tasks that you complete as a clan. So a crucible match, a nightfall strike, which is like a hard dungeon, and then a raid. So we got all three of those last week. I don't think we have anybody who's super into PvP, but so we haven't got like the fourth one, which is a win 7 in a row, punch card style stuff. So
in a row.
Wow. Well, not in a row. You do 9 in a row, and you can only lose 2. So that's still pretty steep in my
But
I'm looking forward to more Destiny 2. And again, like bit.ly/d2amove. I know some people are asking in the chat, and I mean, this probably won't be the last time we talk about Destiny 2. We're going to talk about the expansion, because it comes out in literally 2 weeks. So people are asking about main PvP, Trials of the Nine. So we can't do that. That's the one I was talking about with Trial of the Nine, where you have to get 7 wins as a clan. And I don't know. We tried it. Maybe we could do it. But I mean, we did two PvP matches last night, and the only reason we were winning is because David was playing with us, and he's really good. So it was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to playing more Destiny 2 sooner rather than later.
Very, very cool. Well, I also played some endgame content this week. Mario Odyssey, done. It's really interesting because at the completion of the main story, you're like nowhere near completed the game, which I thought was a really interesting choice by them. So basically, there's like over 900 moons to find altogether. And I finally realized, like, and we kind of assumed that this was the case, but those giant metal boxes that you find in every world, Basically, and Ryan, how far are you? Like, I don't necessarily want to, you know, spoil too much stuff.
I've completed the main campaign, if you want to call it that. I almost said content, but it's all like main content. I've completed the main campaign, and I've started to work my way towards like the next. So I got the first tier of get 250 moons.
Okay, right. Yeah. So that's the thing. You do a whole bunch more moon collecting. Basically, you can go back to all these other worlds. When you go back to these worlds, there's things like Princess Peach is traveling all over the place, so you can, you know, find her in all the different worlds. And then those big metal boxes that we figured were endgame content because there was no way to unlock them. We hadn't been taught, yet they exist in every world from the very beginning. So basically those populate the world with a whole bunch more moons that you have to go find. So for me, like the story, air quotes, of Mario Odyssey was like, meh. Like there wasn't too much of a story, and that was kind of fine. Like the game itself is so much fun that finishing the main story wasn't really like, isn't the highlight.
No, it's
like,
not.
You know, like, and the fact that you go back to all these other worlds, like it's just more puzzles. It's more things to do. They're more challenging. It's super fun. It doesn't feel like when you finish the main story that you're kind of at the end of anything. So yeah, it was really, really cool and interesting. And I'm still enjoying Mario Odyssey. Like you mentioned, there's new worlds you can unlock. So there's the dark side of the moon and the darker side of the moon at like 250 and 500 moons. So not to mention the you can go back to the Mushroom Kingdom, which is really cool. It's so like Super Mario 64 nostalgia, like overload going there. It's really, really neat.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we're going full spoilers, that's the biggest one. I mean, not that Mario, you shouldn't be surprised. I mean, it was a pleasant surprise that they recreated basically the main lobby of Mario 64 outside of the castle. Inside the castle, it's pretty, it's not very, it's very basic. It's one room. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like there, and there's some very specific nods to Super Mario 64 in the Mushroom Kingdom that had me just transported back to 96 playing that game
on right, and we don't have like we're not gonna spoil each and every little thing, the Mushroom Kingdom was really, really cool. Not to mention too, there's a whole bunch of turtle races, which I really love, which is basically like it's this I think that was another Super Mario 64 thing actually.
There was one star where you had to race the dude to the top.
Yeah, so it's basically like there's as far as I know a turtle race in each of the worlds, and you can like they get kind of progressively harder as you beat them. There's an online leaderboard, like it's really, really cool. There's lots to experience past the main quest sort of thing. I get main story of Super Mario Odyssey, so it almost feels like the main story of Super Mario Odyssey is almost like a tutorial. Like it wasn't that quick. Like it was, you know, I don't even know how many hours. I'm probably close to like 15 hours, I guess. If like you just did like the world, the main quest, enough moons and moved on, then I feel like you probably would have put 10 to 15 hours into Mario Odyssey, give or take. But it did feel very kind of tutorial like, because then, you know, you go back and visit these worlds again, they get a lot harder, the number of moons like quadruples, like it's crazy. It's like you finally unlocked what is the actual Super Mario Odyssey game.
Yeah, when I finished the campaign, it felt like that was a fun stretch of like just excellent content where they were telling a story that they wanted to tell, and it wasn't really a story. It's the same story as everything else, like Bowser kidnaps Peach, what you gonna do?
But I did like that, you know, each different world had something that he needed for the wedding. I thought that was really cool. And then it like you say, it was a very basic story, but still more story than Zelda, so there's that.
I mean, like, I'm not gonna argue with that because that would be make this podcast even longer. But it's hard not to, because Zelda is a very stretched out experience and Mario is this very like contained in your face story. Like, you arrive on the planet, here's what you need to do, here's why Bowser's here, go do it. And you know, in Mario Odyssey, I felt like it's the best Mario story ever told. I would probably throw that out there, in that it's more than just you need to collect enough stars to kill Bowser type stuff. But you know, everything was just really well designed in that, and being at, like, I was worried that at the end of the campaign it'd be like, now you can go back and do this little extra cleanup stuff, but mm-hmm. it's you're right, it's not that. It's really the main game.
It's not cleanup at all. Yeah, it is.
And
but
yeah.
So what I was going to say is that there was only one kingdom out of all of them that I felt was like really poorly designed, and I was disappointed in, and that was the Luncheon Kingdom. Which I think we saw it's like the second to last one before all the bonus things. And we saw it in some preview at some point. And I remember thinking then, wow, that looks really like these have to be like the placeholder polygons. And there's like, there were no textures on it and everything else. And I was like, oh, this must be a super early view of this kingdom. It wasn't. I found it like it was super, super generic. They could have done so much more. And like even the textures weren't really interesting. Mm. Like they were very flat in some cases. And I was kind of like, I got there and I was like, oh, like this still looks kind of crappy. Like all of the like molten soup is just pink, which is an odd choice. Like, I don't know. I just, I found when I got there, I was really disappointed because some of the other ones were really well fleshed out.
Yeah.
Even the one I'm using as my background right now is like the little like sombrero Mexican cacti desert town, which is it's super again fleshed out. I mean the desert even like there's like sand dunes and there's like waves in the sand and like ice sculptures and stuff because the desert's actually frozen and you know like it Luncheon Kingdom was just so bland and boring and not even just in the like. I'm mainly talking like visual, not necessarily the encounters and stuff, but just like the visuals of it were just so weird and unfinished looking, unpolished. And oh, the other one that I felt was really well done too was the forest one, where you know like there's the dinosaur down below, and then there's all the forest stuff and the you know wrecked and falling apart rusting machines, and like there was so much there. And then you get to the Luncheon Kingdom, and it's very much like these boxes you have to jump from. That just have one color on them. And like, I mean, I think the most detailed thing was probably like those little cobs of corn that you had to like run on. Like
very good looking corn, might I add.
But then it felt like they were at the corn and the tomatoes felt like they were out of place because everything else looked so simplistic. That was my one thing where I was like, what even is this world and who designed it? Cause yeah.
Yeah. And the beauty of
some stuff.
I mean, the beauty of Mario Odyssey is that you do not need to go back there. I think that unless you're collecting everything and kudos to you if you want to, but there's enough content in the game.
Super completionist on this, like with all the moons and all the outfits and all the just everything. Man, there's so much to collect in this game. It's ridiculous.
Part of me is glad I bought it as a cart so I can remove it from the Switch so I can play other games on occasion. And the only unfortunate part about Odyssey coming out so close to Fire Emblem Warriors is that I just have not had a chance to scratch that itch yet. But Mario Odyssey, honestly, is a fantastic title. And the post-game content, which it feels like the real game to me. And I dig the whole, like, we're just going to keep traveling. We're going to keep finding these moons. And it's basically...
Well, you get to be almost like a tourist then at that point, right? Which is exactly what Peach is doing. She's like, you go back to the Mushroom Kingdom. They're like, oh no, Peach is gone again. And it's like, she's like, yeah, I just got kidnapped, man. Like, I needed a break. I'm on vacation. traveling all the different worlds.
So, I mean, like, it's a Mario game. Spoilers, whatever. But how did you feel about Peach's sort of like... Just her just like F this noise at the end of it and being like, you two are the worst people in the world. I'm going sightseeing. I'm going to travel the world. And I thought that was like kind of, you know, if you're going to have Peach get kidnapped every single time, that's kind of the best.
Sick of it eventually, right?
That's kind of the best way to end the game in a way that's like, you know, Peach has sort of, they've been treating her with, you know, a little bit more respect with every Mario game that comes out. And I feel like this one's kind of, you know, top of the line in terms of what they've done with, she's a very two-dimensional character, but, you know, what they've done here in this game, I feel has been really good for the character, and it's just like, although it all goes away if in the next game she just gets kidnapped again, it's like, Nintendo, come on, you know.
What I kind of wish, although obviously it would have been pretty spoilery, but I kind of wish that Peach's like amiibo, instead of being Peach in her, you know, kidnapped wedding gown, I wish it had been like Peach in one of her travel outfits with like carrying a suitcase with like a whole bunch of stickers from all the different worlds on it, because they have those art assets, right? Like you can buy a sticker from every world in each of the shops. So that would be such a cool amiibo. I would buy that in a second. Maybe that's what I should do. I should like write Nintendo and be like, hire me. No, I will make your amiibos and they'll be so awesome.
You're basically telling them to create a second wave of Super Mario Odyssey ones where it's just like, remember Mario when he's dressed up as a caveman? Now you can get caveman Mario.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you can't, like, they didn't think to make, like, a $30 amiibo of Mario that, like, you could put, and then buy outfits for him, like a freaking doll or something. Like, I'm surprised that they haven't done that. Just, like,
maybe the problem?
Amiibo is, like, is Boxer Mario, so he's just wearing his boxers, and then you can buy all the outfits to put on your amiibo.
Look, I already get made fun of enough for buying amiibos. I do not need to get made fun of for buying a Mario doll that you can dress up.
That you can dress up.
Caden's not old enough for a cover, to be a cover for that purchase. Amiibos, I can get away
they're
with.
Collectible, they're statue, they're,
yeah,
you know,
but I don't dress
pieces.
Them.
But if you're dressing them, it's too far.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that I feel it just, you know.
You would be mocked.
Probably.
By your non-gamer friends, basically.
No. It's the internet. I mean, let's be honest. But, you know, I fully believe that there will be another wave of Mario Odyssey stuff, and they'll do at least another round of, you know, Mario or Peach. But I agree with you. I think Peach in her wedding dress was kind of like,
I hate that amiibo so much.
She was not at any point in the game chose to dress in that wedding dress. And I feel like that's the thing no one's talking about, is that Bowser forced her to do a lot of terrible things in this game. And
Wario did a lot of terrible things too, with this whole mind control thing.
Yeah. I don't know how many times I've possessed a Goomba and then just jumped off a cliff. And
right?
Being like, see ya, fools. I respond. I don't know about you. But no, you're right. There's a lot, and you kind of have to check your head at the door, because if you don't, there's a lot of questions there. And at the end of the game, I think Peach is the one asking, is doing the tough answers and being like, both of you are terrible.
You both suck. I'm out of here.
Exactly. You both suck. You both literally just fought over me and then literally fought over me again in front of me in a very like typical cartoony way. And then she, you know, rather than doing the, oh, Mario, she's just like, F you guys, and leaves. But, you know, like, leaves enough space for Mario to escape and not Bowser, which I thought was, at least she threw Mario a little bit of a bone, but
yeah.
Then she disappears again, yeah, like you said. And I thought, and I was like, oh, great, the post-game content is me saving Peach again? Like, Nintendo. Oh, Nintendo. But it wasn't. I was glad that she was being
safe and happy and vacationing.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. That was a nice touch.
Yeah. Before we move on to our topic of the week, we wanted to remind everyone that you can go to patreon.com/thegamersin. We love each and every one of our patrons. You guys can join us for game night every third Thursday of the month. We've been having a lot of fun lately. We just played Smite the other night, which was super, super fun. So make sure that you go over to patreon.com/thegamersin. We are also talking about doing, as Ryan alluded to a little bit earlier, we're going to do another Inside the Game episode to kind of help promote that, because that is one of our unlockables over on Patreon. So we want to give you guys a better idea of what we intend to do with that content. So yes, if that's something that you would like to see, head on over to patreon.com/thegamersin. You can also join us on our Discord, which is bit.ly/TGI Discord. And Ryan, we have a patron ad this week.
We do. Simon has been an awesome supporter of the Gamers Inn, and he's here to tell us about Weekly News Desk, which is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at weeklynews.com.
Which brings us to our topic of the week this week that we alluded to off the top of the show, which is all of the Black Friday deals that you can find. So we're going to go through these fairly quickly. We're not going to dwell on too much stuff. It's a pretty light week this week, just in terms of news, because it is American Thanksgiving. So we decided to go with Black Friday deals. As I mentioned earlier, Steam is already like way ahead of the game, putting everything on sale for their, I believe they call it the autumn sale. It's like everything. I don't even want to like go through everything that's on my wish list, because I think the whole thing is just on sale.
No, you're right. Like pretty much everything that was released before November 1 has been put on sale, with a few exceptions. So if there's something that you've been waiting for and you're just like, I don't know, like if it just had 10% off, it would like throw me over the edge. It's there. It's on sale. Like some games, some highlights of in terms of deep cuts is like Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus came out same day as Mario Odyssey. It's 50% off.
Wow, already?
At a couple places across the board. So if you want it on PlayStation, it's $40 on PlayStation. You want it on Xbox, it's $40 there too. So there's a lot of big deals.
Even just looking at the main page here, like the highlighted deals, Resident Evil franchise is up to 87% off. Shadow of War, 40% off, which we raved about Shadow of War. It was really, really fun. If you haven't checked it out, 40% off. So for me, Canadian, it's like $48. Still really, really good deal. That game was really fun. What else? Oh, Dark Souls 3, it's $26 Canadian, so that's probably like $20-ish American. Like, there's some really, really good deals on Steam right now, and like I said, it's already, obviously already started. It goes from 1 p.m., or no, so now until 1 p.m. on November 28th, which is basically next Tuesday. So if there's anything that you're interested in, I don't think that they're doing, they're like highlighting deals, but they're not doing what they used to do, which was, you know, like all the time deals and stuff, and like you had to buy something between, you know, like whatever, noon and 4 p.m. to get like the super mega deal. It's just like everything is on sale. It is what it is. It's done, you know, through till next Tuesday. So if you're looking for anything on Steam, that has started up. What else have you got for me, Ryan?
Well, I would say in terms of a recommendation on Steam, look at Hob, which is by the Torchlight guys. Their studio, unfortunately, is being shut down, but this was their last game. It's fantastic. It's very much a link to the past. Check that out. 25% off. But on PC, you've got everything. Humbles has their fall sale. Green Man Gaming has their Black Friday sale, which if you're a VIP, you're getting extra bonuses there. 15% off everything on top of the discounts they're already giving you. Blizzard has a sale. Big stuff there includes, if you haven't bought Origin, Overwatch, which I don't know who you are, it's 50% off. You can go buy that. And you can buy either the Game of the Year edition that comes with a bunch of extra stuff, or the regular one. World of Warcraft has a sale on a bunch of stuff, 50% off.
Which actually, I did want to mention something because someone in Raid mentioned this to me last night. If you are interested in boosting a character, you can actually buy the standard edition of World of Warcraft Legion for $25, and then that comes with a character boost. So you can pay $25 for Legion, set up another iteration of Warcraft, and then just send the boost to whatever character that you want to actually boost. So it's basically like you're getting more than half off of the character boost, because character boosts are $60. So is a $25 character boost.
So basically, you can add multiple instances of Legion to your account?
Yep.
Oh. I guess the purpose of that would be like multi-boxing? What would be the purpose of that?
I have one, so I don't know, but it's a thing that you can do.
It's a thing you can do, and good thing, because it's a like, cheap boost.
Yeah, it's anyways, yeah, cheap boost. It's cool. more than half off the character boost if you are interested.
Yeah, and Heroes has their normal shenanigans of you can buy the 360 stim pack, which people have gone and done the math. I guess it's not a good deal, but it's there if you want it. And then they have
deal. That makes me really sad, because I always buy it when it's like 50% off or whatever.
I mean, I don't know. I don't buy it. I don't play it enough. But I think if you play at least once a week, it's got to be worth it, or else they wouldn't sell it, right? Blizzard's a very honest company. They wouldn't do that. Jim, if you're listening. Then they have a bunch of stuff there. They have two big bundles, you know, falling in line with their move to gems and stuff, and then there's 50% off discounts on a bunch of stuff there that you can check out. But the big one is Destiny 2 has a sale, so you can get 35% off the standard edition, which would get you into the raid that we talked about today, or you can get the game plus expansion bundle or the deluxe edition for 25% off, which is a good deal considering that game is not a month old. And if you pick up the expansion pass bundle, you're going to be getting that new content that comes out on the 5th. So you're not being called out. I'm agreeing with you, Jim. It's fine. big-ish sales on Blizzard. I know we chatted before the show, and there's no Hearthstone sales, but I guess
there are no Hearthstone sales.
Is there ever? I don't think they've ever had really. Like a 50% off old pack stuff.
Oh God, no, no. They do the one time only pre-order offer, so that lets you get your whatchamacallit, your 50 packs before the actual expansion launches, but you can only do that one time per account, so you can't kind of stack up your 50 for 50. Hmm. Which, now that they've done the currency localization, it's not even 50 for 50 anymore. I think it's 50 for, what did you say, like 67 bucks or something? Yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean,
stupid amount of money that is always going to work out in Blizzard's favor, of course. So there's that.
Yeah.
I liked buying things in U.S. dollars because I get paid in U.S. dollars. So then I wasn't actually affected by the currency exchange at all. It was awesome. But they don't do that anymore. So.
But if you're paying... not to distract here, but if you're paying with your U.S. dollars in Canadian, you're actually getting a better deal, wouldn't you? Because they're, I don't know, whatever. It is weird.
Every time you change the currency, there's exchange rate, or there's fees and stuff. So anyways, true. Doesn't matter. Point is, now not U.S. dollars anymore, and that makes me sad.
So go ahead.
What were you going to say? I was going to say Blizzard Gear Store also has a very big sale going on right now. They're doing, I think, daily deals all the way through the Black Friday week. And this is the thing from Blizzard that normally kills my wallet, is their gear store. So if you're like me and you heart all of the Blizzard swag that they do, because that's what they're really good at, then Blizzard Gear Store is having a big sale too.
Yeah, so my big thing for the gear store is something I was wondering. How does the shipping to Canada work? Because usually when you ship stuff...
It sucks.
Oh, it's terrible? Okay, so basically the discount is like...
Yeah, the actual cost of the shipping isn't bad, but the duty at the border is killer.
Oh, I guess. Yep. But that's unfortunate. So for you American listeners.
Pay about whatever I pay in the gear store, I usually have to pay at least a quarter of that in duty. So like if I pay, $60 in the gear store, by the time it gets to me, it might cost me 80 or 90 bucks. So.
Wow. Okay. So that's why you buy all your stuff at BlizzCon and then.
I buy my stuff at BlizzCon, or I have my stuff shipped to American friends that I know I'm going to see at cons or whatever, and then they just bring it to me. I just have to, wait 6 months in some cases, but it's worth it.
All right.
Because the duty across the border is ridiculous.
That's good. But for those folks who do live in the States, that you spend over $100, you get free shipping.
You get free shipping. It's great, as long as you don't have to take it across the border. So the gear store is having a sale. We also have both the Xbox Store and PlayStation Store are doing some discounts and sales as well. So you can get you pay a dollar for Xbox Gold. Explain.
Yeah. So Xbox has this really cool deal where all their savings are boosted when you have Gold. The crazy part is between the Xbox and PlayStation is that like. A month of Gold and a month of PlayStation Plus are $11.99 in Canada, $9.99 in the States, which is crazy to get a deal where you might only be saving $10. So with the Xbox, you can sign up for Gold for a dollar, and it's a dollar for a month, so it's only for that month, but it covers the sale, right? So you get that extra boost without spending a bunch of extra money. And the other thing they've added this year is that you can get a month of Game Pass for $1, which is basically an access to download a bunch of games as long as your subscription's active. And there's some pretty solid titles on that list if you're not. And it applies to both, I believe, Xbox and Windows. So when you buy Gold or Game Pass, you can then use that. So if you don't have an Xbox One, Jim, you can actually buy it on PC and play those Game Pass games that are cross-compatible, like ReCore or other titles like that. So that's really cool.
It's a dollar for 1 month. It's not like a dollar for your annual subscription, right?
It's for 1 month. Okay. Yeah, no, 1 month.
Because that's what I thought you were saying, and I was like, holy crap, like I paid like 60 for the PlayStation one. Like,
yeah, there's right now it's $1 for 1 month, like I said, which covers the sale and gets you into the holiday season, which is a nice touch, and honestly makes you have to renew come the holiday season, which is also a nice touch. But it's a really cool deal, and there's lots of stuff on sale, and honestly, most of it is matched by the PlayStation Store. The only difference is that the PlayStation Store has most of their discounts available to everybody, the same discounts, and there's a couple that are boosted by having PlayStation Plus, but I looked at those titles, and they're not anything to write home about. Not anything to write home about. They're kind of like some older ones. I don't know why they chose those as PlayStation Plus exclusive extra bonus, but yeah, up to 50% off stuff on the PlayStation Store, and I think it's the same on Xbox. So Yeah, you if you have a gaming system, something is on sale. I didn't include the Nintendo ones because there's not many good ones, but there's even stuff on sale there. It's just nothing.
Which is too crazy because that's not a thing Nintendo usually does.
No, they announced their Black Friday sales and there's a couple things on there, but nothing crazy that you would be like, oh my God, Mario. No, you're gonna have to go to the big box stores for those type of deals, and I haven't really seen many of them. But in terms of worldwide type stuff, like these are the big four or five that you can kind of, wherever you are, enjoy those sales. So.
So we wish you good luck in all of your Black Friday shopping. That's pretty much going to do it for us tonight. We did want to remind you guys that Extra Life donations are open until December 31st. You can go to bit.ly/TGI Extra Life 2017 to donate to one of the people on our roster. We really appreciate everyone who has supported the campaign so far. We've done a really good job. We've raised over $4,000 for the Children's Miracle Network, which is amazing. Thank you guys so much. We have had our best year ever, but we can always do that little bit more. So I think we're going to be doing some streams throughout December that are going to help support the effort as well. We also recorded a new episode of For Azeroth just in order to promote, well, to talk about everything that happened at BlizzCon for World of Warcraft, but also to help promote the Extra Life push. So if you guys haven't already, you can even just help us spread the word. Again, that link is bit.ly/TGI Extra Life 2017. Ryan, we have another patron ad this week.
We do. This one comes from The Geek Review, which is a podcast that reviews everything and anything for an honest consumer review. The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com.
We also did want to remind you guys, or at least let you know, that this is episode 296, which means episode 300 is rapidly approaching. Yeah. We wanted to know what you guys want us to do. So if you want to send in your feedback, you can do that by emailing info@gamersandpodcast.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, whatever your platform of choice is. We want to know what you want us to do. It's pretty much going to be our Game of the Year episode, or it's going to be around that time. Yeah. So if you just want us to do Game of the Year for 300, that's cool. If you want us to maybe like... review specific games, go back and play old stuff, bring on different guests. There's all kinds of things that we could do, or we could just do a regular episode. So make sure you hit us up on your platform of choice and let us know what you would like us to do for episode 300. We want to know how we should celebrate. So please do let us know. You can visit us on the web at gamersandpodcast.com. You can find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth, Embrace the Spoilers, and Heroes Forge. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/amovetv. Again, if you'd like to email the show and let us know what you think we should do for episode 300, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving.